Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bedpost Podcast. I, of course, am your host, Aaron Pym, and what I like to do here on the podcast is bring fun and sexy guests into the studio to have in-depth conversations about sex and sexuality. And today, you know, quarantine, that whole thing. So I don't have someone in person in the studio, but I have a fantastic, lovely guest here with me over Skype, and I'm trying a new audio thing. So, you know, let me know if this is working for you. I feel like it's going to be a lot better than the previous remote episodes I've been doing. So hope you like it, everybody. Without further ado, I'm going to introduce a guest who has been on the podcast several times at this point, and I've been, like, looking for a way and a reason and, you know, the courage, perhaps?
Aw. I'll come on anytime.
I love you. And the lovely voice you're hearing, of course, is sex writer and podcaster. She is the co-host of the Dildorks and the Question Box podcast. Please welcome to the mic, everyone, Kate Sloan.
Hi, thank you for having me back.
Honestly, yeah, I get social anxiety about it. And I'm like, is it too short? Has it been too long? Do they still know who I am?
Yeah, well, like, the podcast is fine because I have an endless amount of things to say about the topics of your show. But, like, what stresses me out more is, like, when you want me to do music for the show, or your live show. And it's not because I don't like to do that. It's just because I don't write songs very often anymore. So I'm like, these people have heard these songs before. But this is totally fine.
Okay, good. I'm glad I only give you a lot of stress in one avenue of Bedpost.
No, I mean, it's delightful. And honestly, everybody has been so nice every time that it has greatly diminished that anxiety for me. Because it's like, maybe they have heard it before and maybe they forgot. Or maybe they liked it the first time and they're happy to hear it again.
Exactly. That's totally the case, because you're an absolutely fantastic songwriter, beautiful singer, and you're a joy to have, you know, both here on the pod and then also on the stage show, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So today we're coming together kind of with a topic-based episode. I shot you an email because I wanted to do, you know, something that's kind of related to COVID-19, but not just talking about it, because kind of everyone's doing that right now, and maybe we all feel kind of, you know, like all our media is kind of oversaturated with stuff like that. But I still wanted to offer, you know, people maybe some help and insight into what you may be going through at this time. So I kind of wanted a related topic. So I approached you with this idea of talking about long distance relationships.
Yeah, I mean, it's very weird that, like, this time period obviously is a huge shift in lifestyle for almost everyone.
Yeah.
But for me, it's, like, actually not that much of a practical difference in my day-to-day, because I'm a freelancer who works from home and I'm in a long-distance relationship. So it's, like, already pretty good at the social distancing thing. But there's just a little bit less going outside these days.
Yeah, totally. And one of your posts that kind of struck me, you have a great Twitter feed that everyone should follow, which we'll plug at the end of the pod. You kind of said, you know, something along those lines where you don't feel like your whole schedule routine has been completely uprooted. However, it's like there are small things that you do miss. You're like, I would go get a coffee, you know, I would take a small walk to go to the bank. I would, you know, so like little breaks in my day, those I don't have anymore, which is like, you've kind of been noticing how essential those were to like balance and your mental health, right?
Yeah, because it's like the thing about how you get some of your best ideas when you're in the shower or when you're walking or when you're doing something that's sort of repetitive and slightly outside of your routine. Like when you're away from the computer is when you often have like really good creative ideas, I find.
Yeah.
And I'm just in a space now where like I'm not really ever that far from my computer. And I'm really missing that and like realizing how much that was like a critical part of not only my creative process, but also like my mental health management strategies. And I'm sure that a lot of people are finding some difficulties with that these days. I've been going for some walks.
That's good. Staying
far away from people. So yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah. For me, it's interesting. I stopped doing a day job where like you go somewhere for, you know, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 days a week. I stopped that in like November. So I think I experienced a huge shift at that time where I mm-hmm. was suddenly just doing, you know, the podcast and, all the other little bedpost things that I do. But just doing like a couple pro-doming appointments a week and the rest I had free time at home. So I think I went through a lot of like what people are experiencing now. I went through that like back in November. I feel like I had to be okay with being at home and I had to kind of find a way to separate work and relaxation and try to achieve balance for myself and like just the fact that I didn't have a schedule and to just try and figure all that out. So it was funny. I had this conversation with my partner, Matt. We both have a Matt about that because, you know, right now he's like, I don't go and do improv. And that's like one of my things I do to feel creative and satisfied and relaxed and social. And that's been taken away. So it's like really difficult. And I'm like, yeah. And just kind of explain this idea. But good to hear that you're doing all right and you're finding ways of coping. What kind of specifically are you doing, you know, any time where you're like, oh, geez, I wish I could just go for a walk and get a coffee or sit in a cafe and work for a couple hours. What are you doing to help get those kind of same feelings or breaks in your day?
Yeah, it's tough because my apartment is very, very small.
Yeah.
So like if I want to go somewhere that's not out, I can like walk to the kitchen, which is like 15 or 20 feet. I don't know. But like taking a break to just mentally switch tasks for a while, I still find is helpful and is a version of the thing we were talking about with like going to get a coffee or whatever. So like if I go to the kitchen and like make a cup of tea, which takes a few minutes, or like cook something, or go hang out with my roommate's cats, or have a conversation with a friend, or I'm also finding it really helpful to limit my access to social media for periods of time. So like on the iPhone, there's a feature called downtime where you can select which apps you want to be available during downtime and which you don't. And I basically turn off everything except for like entertainment, like games and music and podcasts, as well as like communication with my very closest people. So like texting and the phone and FaceTime and everything else I shut off access to, because otherwise I would just be like scrolling the Twitter feed, like working myself into a panic. And like, we're doing enough of that. We don't need to be doing that all the time.
Totally. Yeah. No, great advice. Okay. Since we're going to talk about long distance relationships, I'm sure what is happening now in the world is going to, you know, come up a lot, but, let's start with maybe letting people know your current situation with your long distance relationships. Like what is your setup and what is like a day in the life look like for you?
Yeah, sure. So I live in Toronto and my partner of slightly over 2 years, Matt, lives in New York. And we go back and forth fairly often if we can to see each other for like a weekend, or sometimes I go down there and stay for longer, which I can do because I work from home. And when we're not together, we will like text each other in the morning and then like usually text each other throughout our day, which is nice to like stay feeling connected. And then almost always at night we have a phone call, which is just, it just has the vibe of like when you get home from a hard day of work and your partner who you live with is there and you're just are like, what happened to you today? And like, how are you feeling? And like, do you want to watch a movie? And it's just like, it very much has created that same sense of stability for me in a way that I always imagined was not possible in an LDR. So
yeah.
That's one of the things that has made LDRs really possible for me when I previously had said that I was never going to get into one.
Yeah. And is there a reason that you had kind of said that to yourself previously before getting into this relationship?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the two main things are attention and physical touch. And I was like, I don't think I can get adequately enough of either of those things in an LDR. But first of all, you can certainly get a lot of attention from your partner in an LDR. I do think it demands a certain type of personality because not everybody is great about texting and staying in touch and making someone feel loved from far away, but like certainly it is possible. And then the other thing is that you can also do a lot of sex things without being physically together. So I have a ton of phone sex, and that has been every bit as satisfying to me as in-person sex. So yeah, the LDR life is like not necessarily the worst.
If you could choose, would you you know, morph this relationship into something where you are seeing each other on a more regular basis, or like that you are maybe doing a live-in situation with your partner? Is that something that you desire or wish for this relationship, or no?
Yeah, we do have plans for that in the long term. Our plan is that we want me to move to New York so we can be together and do all the fun, like living together and marriage things eventually. But right now, that's kind of been thrown into chaos because the world is a mess. So I don't know when or if that will happen, but that is the plan.
Yeah, because what's imminent right now apparently is supposed to kind of happen on this weekend is that the border will be like limitedly closed between the U.S. and Canada. So what are you feeling about that?
Yeah, it's very stressful. I have my partner here with me now, because we kind of were like, they're probably going to close the border. Maybe you should fly up here real quick.
Yeah.
And we're still kind of deciding what we want to do because, like, they can fly back and they can probably get home just fine. But then, like, we will both be alone in our separate apartments and we don't know when we will be able to get together again. So, yeah, it's kind of a catch-22 right now.
Yeah, I hear you. It's interesting, actually. Previous to this happening, have had like no experience with LDRs, like really no experience with LDRs. And what happened with me is somebody who I started to date a few months ago, they went on a vacation abroad. So they were in Hawaii for like 2 weeks. And then all of this happened over those 2 weeks. And then thankfully they were able to fly home. So they're now here safe in Toronto. But, you know, they're going to observe the recommended, you know, 2 week quarantine in their house because they've just returned from abroad. And I'm practicing social distancing and isolating anyways. So it will have been, you know, at the minimum of this, it will have been a month before I get to see him again, right? So I'm kind of figuring out exactly all the things you were saying, like how we can still stay connected, like on the daily basis and through texting and whatnot. Like we text a lot. We send pics a lot, even like obviously, yes, lewds, but also just like pics of each other's faces or like,
yeah, because you start to miss their face.
Yes. And like even short little videos, just like a good morning video, you know, or a good night video or something like that has been really valuable to me. Is that stuff that you two do on the regular?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that surprised me about LDRs when we first started dating more seriously is what you were just talking about with pictures of faces, because it's not something that I super used to do a lot with my local partners before this, because I don't know, like I just saw you last Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like I know what your face looks like, but there is something about it that is just so comforting. And it's also like if you send a picture of your face while you're at something that you're going to or while you're doing a particular activity, it can make your partner feel like they're there with you. And yeah, it's just nice. I think I have probably thousands of photos of Matt's face on my phone, and I like to look through them when I'm feeling sad.
Oh my God, yes, that too. I save them, and like I save my favorites, and I like look through them when I'm just like, I need to see your face. Yeah, yeah. And that's funny. The thing about, you know, being a place and taking the picture. Recently he was like, while he was away, he was like in this beautiful pool, just kind of hanging, chilling by himself, in a pool. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that I didn't think of how, like, you know, salient this would be, but he took a picture of himself, like, immediately in that pool as we were texting. And he's like, this is me talking to you right now. And just took a mm-hmm. picture, like, of his face, just chilling in the pool. And I was like, oh, that's so valuable.
yeah recently Matt was in New York and was going to an improv show that I really love to go to there. Mm. And I was saying, like, I'm sad that I can't go with you, and they sent me a picture of them sitting in our usual spot with, like, an empty seat next to them. Oh. And they said, like, saved you a seat, and I was like, don't make me cry.
Oh my God, totally. And okay, something that I'm also doing with my LDR, because we have, like, a kink dynamic. I understand mm-hmm. you also have some sort of a kink dynamic. Would you maybe want to tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I have, like, a DS dynamic with my partner. They are my dominant in, like, a 24/7 sense, basically. Mm-hmm. And I am the submissive. And so I think, like, one of the main ways that that manifests for us when we're apart is protocol, which mm-hmm. is, like, setting rules that certain things happen at certain times. Like, for example, I have to take an iron pill every day because I'm mildly anemic. And we used to have a protocol where if I texted my partner I took my iron, they would send me a picture of their face as a reward, which actually has successfully trained me into taking the pill much more consistently than I was doing before.
I love that.
Yeah, and then we also have protocols around my collar, which I know, like, collars are important for a lot of kinky people, and particularly it seems like a lot of kinky people in LDRs.
Yeah, because it's a symbol. Like, it's a physical thing you have.
Right.
That you can touch, that you can feel on you, that is, like, a symbol of your partner, right? Is that how it feels to you?
Yeah. I mean, it's romantic because it's this symbol of, like, commitment and dedication, and it also is this thing that makes me feel like my partner is with me when I have to do things that are stressful or when I'm sad. And it's similar to another thing we also do, which is, like, leaving each other clothes of ours, so that, like,
oh, for the, I mean, smell.
The smells are important. That's so, and also important. I can just, like, yeah, I can like wear one of Matt's shirts and feel like they're, like, holding me. And yeah, physical items are good if you are able to exchange them.
Oh, that idea with, like, keeping a shirt, you know, wearing a shirt for a couple days and keeping it there, that is, like, really, that I love that so much. Yeah. Smell to me is, like, smelling your partner is, like, that's what I do when I need to relax, is, like, I, like, huff their neck. Like,
yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. I used to sometimes keep Matt's shirts in, like, a Ziploc bag just so that I could hold on to the scent for longer, which is very creepy, but it worked.
Sealing the freshness.
Yeah. Oh,
I love it so much. And do you see, like, for your collar, do you see that as kind of, like, this is how I kind of see collars, like, one, because there are a lot of ways you can look at collaring, right? And a lot of ways that mm-hmm. people can practice it and whatnot. How mm-hmm. I see it and how I tend to practice it with my partners is that it's, like, kind of like a promise ring, you know? It's mm-hmm. a, like you said, it's like a symbol of commitment, like getting, you know, how, you know, vanilla folks in relationships might get their partner a piece of jewelry to wear, like a bracelet or a necklace or a ring, you know. Mm-hmm. I view it as, like, a kinky version of that. Is that something that you resonates with you?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think also, like, I've not always played with collars in this way. Like, I certainly have some that I think of more as play collars. Like, usually they're more, like, durable, so you can actually, like, tug someone around by them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've definitely, like, used those with casual partners when I was craving some particular kinky thing that I felt like wearing a collar would be helpful with, whether it's, like, pet play, attaching a leash, or, like,
yeah,
just being, like, pulled around or whatever. But having a collar that is, like, a symbol of a relationship in this way is just, like, a different thing. It has a different intention, and that changes the whole vibe, and it is just, like, a very precious item to me.
And are you still, is your day collar still the heart ring velvety L'Amour Propre collar?
So I bought, we bought the suede version of that one, and then I, like, sweated through it in a matter of months. So we had L'Amour Propre make us a custom one from, like, blue regular leather, not suede. And it's very, very pretty. And then I also have one that is for, like, fancier occasions, which is a lock, heart-shaped lock that has been engraved with the word daddies, and I wear that on a chain. And it's nice because, like, I can wear that with a fancy dress to a, you know, formal event, and nobody will really notice it that much or comment on it, but I can still feel like I have my collar on.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of vanilla passing. It looks like a locket or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. So I love that you mentioned protocol. I think protocol is, like, the most important thing to kind of get an understanding of when you're entering a DS dynamic, specifically a 24/7 type dynamic. Can you kind of talk to me a little bit more about what types of protocol you can do from far away? Because I think, you know, people that are familiar with protocol, you know, might be, like, familiar with the, oh, when I come home for the day, maybe you're kneeling in this spot for me, or, you know, things like that that are kind of more physical. So maybe you can talk about how you do protocol from far away from each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big one for us that a lot of other people could also do is asking permission or requiring permission for certain things. And this does kind of require that both partners be fairly attached to their phones, because, like, if you need to ask permission to use the bathroom and your partner's in a 2-hour long business meeting, like, that's, I mean, maybe you're into that, but, like, I think for a lot of people that wouldn't work. But, like, for example, like, if my partner sends me a gift in the mail, I have to ask permission to open it. And I often ask for permission to, I have to ask for permission to take my collar off, which usually, is at the end of a work day when I've, like, completed all my tasks. So that just gives me a sense of, like, giving over power and control to someone, even though they're far away, which is, very, very doable, even at a distance.
Yeah. I like that you brought up, you know, it may not always be, because you're not in the same room with each other, you don't know what the other person is doing in their daily life when you're kind of requesting something or asking something. Because that's so true, you know, like, maybe I'm getting down to, you know, masturbate and take some lewds, and they're somewhere doing something where they can't really, like, talk me off via text or, you know, receive a nude, like, maybe they're somewhere where that's not super appropriate, or they don't have time to do that or whatever. So that really, that's understandable for me. Go on.
I think that's one of the reasons that it's helpful, if you're comfortable, sharing calendars with each other. You don't necessarily have to, but it can help you sync up on some of this stuff, because, like, if I can see on my partner's calendar that they're in a meeting, then maybe I'm not going to get quite as anxious that they're not answering my amazing nude. So it, and then also, like, they know when to text me encouraging things. Like, if I'm, you know, doing a podcast with a guest I'm nervous about, they can say, like, have a good show, you're going to be great, or whatever, which also just creates more of that, like, intimacy and entanglement in each other's lives that you would have if you lived together, but without needing to actually live together.
Yeah, that's nice, knowing each other's schedule. I totally get how that can be very helpful when you're doing protocol-y type stuff. Do you have experience with ever doing things I want to say like daily tasks and types of protocol that are reliant like on time, like at this time every day you do things. Do you find stuff like that helpful or not helpful?
I think the main thing I do that's like that is I keep a to-do list every day or basically every weekday, which is in a note on my notes app, which my partner has access to. And it's cute because like I'll write what I have to do for the day, like answer emails, record a podcast, edit another podcast, whatever. And then my partner will add little emojis after each one to kind of acknowledge and like sign off on having seen them. And then I'll check them off during the day. And it's really good for DS in particular because like I feel like it gives my partner a sense of where I'm at and how much I've accomplished. So they know if they need to like swoop in with a little bit of encouragement, maybe a little incentive to get some stuff done. And they know if they need to reward me for having gotten everything done. So it just gives them like a really quick overall picture of like how I'm doing that day. And that helps them support me as a dominant.
Yeah. And something that kind of I thought of while you were saying that, like, what happens, say, if, okay, you're kind of sharing your to-do list with your dominant, with your partner, but for whatever reason, you're just not able to have a productive day that day. Like, maybe you really overshot it with this to-do list. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, the dominant seeing that you're not doing the things on the list and getting a punishment for it may not be helpful for you. It may just be what you do need is the opposite, probably.
Right.
Or to be allowed to take a day off from your stuff because maybe you're having a mental health day, whatever reason. Yeah. Maybe you have a thing to do that day that came up unexpectedly. What happens there?
Yeah, punishment is definitely not a big thing for me. It tends to just make me cry and feel like an awful person.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, so usually if I'm like feeling overwhelmed, which happens to me a lot because I do struggle with depression, sometimes I will ask my partner to reorder my tasks the way that they think they should be ordered, or to even like make a specific schedule for me, like at this time you're going to do this one and then you'll do this and then you'll take lunch, because a lot of times my feeling of overwhelm is related to kind of like executive dysfunction of like I don't know which of these things to start with and I don't know how I'm going to get everything done. And then the other thing is sometimes if it really is too much for a particular day, my partner is very good about like asking me questions to figure out which of these things actually need to get done today and which can be moved over to tomorrow. And then we just like create a little subheading in the list that's like tomorrow or like on the weekend so that I do eventually get everything done, but not in a way that makes me feel like I'm failing.
Yeah. Or that you're pushing yourself too hard in some way to get it all done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's unhealthy for you to, for whatever reason on whatever day, to complete all these tasks that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, while I'm talking about depression, another thing that's, like, more recent for us as a protocol is, like, when I have a depressive spell that lasts several days, like, sometimes I just won't shower for a while. And my partner started instituting a rule that, like, if I get to a point where, like, I need to put showering on my to-do list, which does happen, then part of
You're probably not doing super well.
Yeah. But so part of that task becomes after I shower, I have to send them nudes, which is just kind of a win-win situation because, like, it makes me feel like there's a purpose to me showering and there's a reason why I need to. And it also makes me feel desirable at a time when I otherwise really don't feel that way. And also they get nudes, so like overall just a great situation for everybody.
Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, I want to tell you a little bit about our new sponsor, Hi. Now Hi, that's H-I-I-I, is a dating app with icebreaker games and quizzes for creative, fun, and interesting people, just like yourselves. What I like about the app is that the games give you something to talk about and also show off your personality in the process. So it's a little bit like getting to know somebody over your favorite board game. My favorite game to play on the app is Exquisite Corpse. So that's the one where you draw a picture together. So basically every match that I get, I'm sending the first half of a drawing and I'm asking them to draw the second half for me. And you get this fun little picture. I'm absolutely obsessed with doing this. The other fun thing is that you can take a quiz that I wrote for Bedpost. It's called What Sex Toy Are You? And I gotta tell you, I had a lot of fun writing it. So what you can do is go on over to HIII.com, that's HIII.com/thebedpost, to download the app, take our quiz, and also just so they know we sent you. Oasis Aqua Lounge is a water-themed sex club located right here in Toronto at 231 Mutual Street. Oasis is inclusive of all genders and orientations and is shame-free when it comes to pleasure and play. Check them out at their website, oasisaqualounge.com. Unicorn Collaborators is the local leather business of two queer unicorns. They specialize in luxurious and colorful harnesses for all body types, and even craft non-conventional ones for your thigh, fist, or foot. Check them out at their Etsy shop under Unicorn Collaborators. Lovecrafters Toys is a non-gendered fantasy sex toy line that makes weird and wonderful dildos in the shape of tentacles, unicorn horns, mermaid tails, and more. Their high-quality silicone is hand-poured right here in Toronto. Check out their Etsy shop at Lovecrafters Toys. ComeAsYouAre.com is a trans-owned, trans-operated sex shop that also happens to be feminist and anti-capitalist. They carry only the best sex toys and want to give you the best price possible. Next time, use the coupon code BEDPOST, that's BEDPOST, when checking out at ComeAsYouAre.com. Just to maybe let listeners know who aren't super familiar with like what both partners might get out of something like protocol, mm-hmm. are you able to speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with individual personalities and motivations. And my partner, Matt, is someone who really likes having control over things. Overseeing things, helping people succeed. I mean, like they manage people at their work, and like this is just like something that these traits cross over between their personal and professional lives. And so they find that the DS thing is one outlet for those motivations, and it's very interesting to me that like even if we're both having a day when we're very stressed out or sad or something, them bossing me around or helping me get things done is often helpful for both of us because I feel good about it. I feel guided in this difficult moment. And they also find it sometimes like comforting or helpful. It might make them feel stronger and more in control and more capable to be able to do that for me.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you're a perfect fit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really hard to find. And I feel like I hear from a lot of people who are sad and worried that their partner and them like don't entirely agree on every single point of what they want out of DS. And like, mm-hmm. that's normal. That's very normal. You can definitely find ways to compromise. But also at the same time, like I know that at this point, I don't think I would be able to be in like a DS dynamic with someone whose DS like did not line up with mine to some extent, because yeah. like it, I don't know, this just there's a certain level of incompatibility that is just too much.
Yeah, totally. And where did y'all meet? How did you find your perfect match? Like just out of curiosity for folks that are looking for that.
Yeah, we met on Twitter, which a lot of people think is strange, but I actually think it's a way better way of meeting people, either romantically or platonically. I've met several of my closest people on there because, unlike on a dating site, you're not putting up some kind of front about who you are. Mm-hmm. You're often being more real. I mean, obviously, people do distort things on social media, but I think Twitter tends to be more of a picture of a person than, say, Instagram.
Oh, yes.
Because you get a sense of their sense of humor and what they're into and what they're passionate about and what they hate. And, you know, just like you learn a lot. And
I'm so happy that Twitter happens to be the one platform where sex workers can do stuff, because I love Twitter as a platform for all of those reasons. Like, even though my account technically is like a professional domming account, I still really think that it's great for showing off my real personality and, like, you know, all the little different facets of my personality. I'm free to do that on that platform. So I'm, like, very lucky that that happens to be the platform that will allow me to, like, promote my dommy stuff, because it just, I appreciate it for all those reasons.
Yeah, and you're amazing at Twitter, and your Twitter presence is really, like, strong and inspirational, and I think it is probably very helpful for a lot of clients who, like, are nervous and, like, want to know that the dom that they're going to go see is, like, fun and friendly and won't judge them, and, you know, and I think that really comes through in your tweets.
Aw, thank you so much. So talking about continuing our this topic of being compatible and protocol, specifically from being long distance, do you ever... Are there times where you have where you check in about your protocol, like, you know, to reevaluate or just to kind of talk about whether, okay, so we do this thing every day at this time, let's say. Is there a time where you ever come together, be it remotely or in person, where you talk about whether things are still working or you'd like to add something or change something, anything like that?
Yeah, we do have a list of questions that we work through as, like, a relationship check-in. We originally planned to do them every 2 weeks, and we have been slacking on that. But I think it's a really good habit to get into. And the questions in our list, some of them are sex or kink related, and some of them are just more general relationship questions. But yeah, definitely one of them is, like, how is our DS working? How is our protocol working? Is there anything you want to add or change? Is there anywhere where, like, I want my partner to have more control over my life or less control? And it's really interesting to have those discussions be scheduled rather than just something that you have when you think of something that you want to say, because if you're put on the spot to actually think about it, you might come up with things that you wouldn't have otherwise thought of. Like, you might be like, well, now that you mention it, like, this actually isn't working so great or whatever. And it's great. It just helps keep things going smoothly.
Yeah. And is that something you do remotely or you tend to do together?
I think have only ever done that over the phone, which probably works better for me because I often end up, like, crying during these conversations.
Yeah,
it's not
because
my partner is, like, mean to me or anything sad
it's
is
just,
happening usually.
It's hard,
just, like,
and it's vulnerable.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of like that we don't have to look at each other during those usually, because that's, like, another level of, like, self-consciousness, and I feel like that would inhibit me from being able to, like, truly say all the stuff I needed to say. So that's, like, in this case, a plus of an LDR, I guess.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Is there, you know, are there ways that you do find being long distance advantageous? I know you're a writer, for example, so I'm, you know, I'm fathoming that it might be a really good, like, sexting or texting might be a really good platform for you. Like, you may find it better than, you know, talking or being in the same room face to face. Is that true for you?
Well, interestingly, we actually don't do a lot of sexting.
Nope.
We used to when we first started dating, and then we kind of, like, discovered phone sex and we're like, nope, doing this now forever. But I think, like, for me, the biggest advantages have been related to being depressed and being an introvert, because I know from past experience dating people who live where I live, if I'm having a depressive episode, I will just see my partner less frequently. I will have sex less frequently, even though I know sex, like, helps me with that, because I feel gross, I feel unattractive, I don't want to go out anywhere, I don't want to shower, I don't want to shave my legs. Not that you have to shave your legs for a partner, but, like, it does make me feel more desirable. So a lot of that is kind of taken away when you're far apart, because if we're having phone sex, my partner doesn't know that I haven't showered in 2 days and need to shave my legs. Like, to them, I'm still like entirely the sexy person who they remember. And I also don't have to feel like I need to do my makeup. I don't even need to put pants on. I don't need to leave my house. Yeah. And I can still experience like both the pleasure and the intimacy of sex, which is just really transformative and important for me.
Yeah. So I love, okay, I love that you prefer the medium of phone to talk to, because I think a lot of us forget, you know, that these little social media machines are actually phones too, that you can talk to people on if you so choose.
Yeah, well, I should note, when I say phone sex, mm-hmm. I actually am referring mostly to FaceTime audio.
Great.
Which I would recommend over the phone if you can, or like Skype audio even, or like whatever internet-enabled audio medium, because the quality is higher, which we have learned in phone sex is important, because if you can hear the way someone is breathing and like very small minute changes like that, like you can have a greater sense of like what's going on for them, which is very important.
Oh yeah, you can hear the sighs, the changes in breath, the moans, the groans. That's like where it's at when you're talking about like audio porn. You gotta get the gotta have the quality, because all that is like, oh, the all those little nuggets are just so tasty. That's one thing actually I don't like about doing professional phone sex work, is the calls are usually such low quality that you can barely fucking hear them, let alone like hear small nuanced stuff like that. So I love I love that you have that tip for people. That's great. Okay, so so phone sex. Okay, I happen to know that you get into a very cool kink most of the time when you're doing phone sexy times. Would you love to, would you like to tell people a bit about what types of kinks you generally get up to when you are doing stuff on the phone with your partner?
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, there's a lot you can do. I know that you have had my partner on before to talk about erotic hypnosis. And yeah, and that is, I mean, I've gone super in depth on that on like many other things. So like, I don't really like probably need to go do it again, especially since you did such a great episode with Matt about it. But that is a kink that is like very easy to do long distance, because all you really need is your voice and your words. And with that, you can do like hypno bondage. You can mess with arousal levels. You can make touch feel more real. So like, it really opens up a lot of opportunities, as far as LDR sex goes.
Nice.
Another one that we do a lot is impact, which is, controversial, because some people say that you shouldn't hit yourself, either because it could be dangerous or it could be, kind of a self-harm impulse or something like that.
Right.
But my partner and I do it in a way where they will pick the implement. They will tell me an intensity, like, I want you to start hitting yourself at a 2 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And then they will say the word now every time they want me to hit myself. Mm-hmm. So that, now that we're very well practiced at that, that feels to me almost like an in-person impact scene, because like my hand responds to their words very quickly, so that sometimes it doesn't even feel like I'm hitting myself.
Interesting.
And I'm still like getting my submissive joys out of like following directions, and that's very fun.
Yeah, I am. I currently just submitted an article that's called "Keeping Kinky in Quarantine" to the Ritual Chamber blog, and that was something that I talked about. The header was remote control toys, but what I got to was that, you know, you don't need a high-tech toy. You can have any, you know, any lo-fi toy, non-tech toy that you have around, and you just use the sub as the remote, and you can and exactly how you were describing, like, they can, the top or the dom can determine the intensity, the frequency, like, of literally anything you're doing or holding. Or inserting or inflating yeah. or shocking or like on and on, right? They can just yeah. be, you know, maybe it's more effective than those Bluetooth vibes that are so, so glitchy.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is also where it's nice to be in like more of a long-term thing, because over time you get to know what your partner's responses sound like. And so like, my partner can definitely tell if I'm not fucking myself as hard as they would be if they were here, so they can just tell me harder. And then the experience is more like in-person sex for both of us.
That's really funny. They can tell that you're not. Oh, that's great. I love it.
Yeah, and like an interesting thing too is like they can make me squirt from far away, because wow. like they are very familiar with like what I sound like when I'm
about to
getting close to that. Yeah, and like what needs to happen, and like I can like pretty competently make myself squirt, but like I don't know, it's really wild that they can make me squirt from 500 miles
wow.
away.
Wow. And do you think that would be able to happen? Say if you were in an LDR where you really had very limited time together. Maybe you only see each other in person like a couple times a year, or maybe mm-hmm. you had, you know, a month or a few months of dating and then had to, and then moved and mm-hmm. We're still, you know, in a relationship from two different places, and you maybe didn't have access to each other really ever. Mm-hmm. Do you think you could still build, like, you know, this sexual chemistry, this kinky chemistry that you two seem to have? Do you think that is possible for people that are in those positions?
I think so. I do think it depends very much on what type of person you are, though, because, like, whenever I talk about this stuff online, I do hear from a lot of people who are like, oh, like, I could never get into phone sex. Like, it's just doesn't feel the same to me. It just isn't as satisfying, isn't as exciting yeah. or as immersive. And like, certainly you can work on those things and try to improve your ability to like immerse in those situations. But like, there are some people who just don't like it, can't get into it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I will say like phone sex and in-person sex, both of those can like give you information that will be helpful when you're doing the other one. So it kind of goes both ways. Like when my partner and I first had sex in person for the first time, mm-hmm. we had already been sexting and having phone sex for, like, a month. Mm-hmm. So they were already, like, familiar-ish with, like, what I sounded like at different points in the arousal process, or, like, what kinds of words and phrases turn me on and stuff like that. So it was definitely, like, the best first time yeah. I've ever had with someone, which is basically because it wasn't really a first time.
Yeah, that's another thing that's happening with me right now, actually, like... right before we decided to do this isolation thing, I had just made a date with somebody that we had to cancel, unfortunately, right, mm-hmm. because of all of this. So we've yeah. been talking on the phone, and it's interesting because, like, who knows what's going to happen with this? It's obviously very new, but, mm-hmm. you know, say we have, like, weeks on the phone with each other leading up to a first time where we would be alone together doing a scene or doing or having sex. You know, I imagine that would just inform you so much. Even just like all the psychology surrounding their kinks. Like, you're going to have all that knowledge. So I 100% agree with you. I'm like, if you're on the phone with somebody for weeks and weeks beforehand, the first time happens, it's probably going to be a hell of a lot better than, you know, usual first time sex, which is usually not the best, in my opinion, anyways, in my experience, anyways.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I there are some risks of that, of this type of thing, especially if you, like, haven't met in person yet.
Yeah.
Which, like, a lot of people are worried about, like, what if I meet them and I'm just not attracted to them? Yeah. Which is really one of those strange things about our species, that, like, you can look at pictures online of someone and think that they're cute, yep. and you can talk to them on the phone yep. and think that they sound cute and smart and everything. And then maybe you meet them in person and something pheromonally yeah. or with their mannerisms or whatever is just, like, not doing it for
you. Or energy,
and
yeah.
Yeah, and that definitely does happen, but it kind of raises the question of, like, if you had never met that person and had just kept up your phone relationship, like, would that have been ultimately, like, more fulfilling to you? I don't know.
That's very interesting indeed. Wow. Okay. I have a couple questions from the Instagrams and the Twitters.
Okay.
For you, if you would like to address these, we'll see. We'll see how good they are. Okay. Mm-hmm. JCorman85 from Instagram asks, I have an LDR with another switch. So we have two switches, I guess. How do we keep it hot in quarantine? Very general question. But are you able to speak on being switchy? Because you're a little switchy, are you not?
A little bit. I would say I'm probably...
I've heard you're topping some hypnoscenes. That's on my radar.
Yeah, I would say, like, I'm definitely, like, more toppy than I am dommy,
gotcha,
I guess,
gotcha,
if I could make a distinction there. But yeah, I'm mostly a sub and a bottom. But I think an interesting thing for switches talking on the phone or on Skype or whatever is to have different names or honorifics that you use when you're in different roles so
Love
that you
that.
Can... communicate that. Yeah, because like when you're in person you might have like kind of subtle like body language shifts that could communicate that, but like for example I have a friend who does role plays with her partner of these ongoing characters, and in one of them she's like an older woman figure and in another one she's like a younger woman, like a young naive woman, and she has two different like female names that she has picked out for each of those personas, and either of them using those names just kind of like signals to the other one like this is what we're doing now. And of course like if you're not feeling it at that moment you can always like back out of that, but I think that that's a really helpful cue.
Oh my god, I love it, totally love it. Okay. Red Tongue DeRaven on Instagram, who is actually a lovely burlesque dancer I've had at the show. She's fantastic. She asks, we kind of covered this, but maybe we could go into it a little more specifically here. How do people with a love language like physical touch make an LDR work long term?
Yeah, I consider physical touch to be maybe my second most important love language after words of affirmation.
Yeah.
And like words being so high for me is probably a big reason why this has worked well for me.
Yeah.
But definitely you can do self-touch in a way that is directed by a partner's instructions or even by them just describing how they would be touching you if they were there, and you can just kind of follow that with your hands. It probably takes a little bit of practice for that to start to feel natural and like they're actually touching you. But I think with practice, it does get easier and it does start to feel more real, especially if you are also practicing imagining and fantasizing at the same time. And, you know, maybe like blindfold yourself, maybe do other things to sort of make it feel a little more special, like lighting incense or changing the lighting so that like the vibe is a little more sexy.
Yeah.
I think that that can help create a context where your own touch can feel like it's not your own touch.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. I have a very rude comment that is not a question, but they're basically saying, I'm not going to repeat it because it's rude. It's basically saying that LDRs suck, essentially, is the comment. But what I'm curious about when I read that, because what I want to ask them is, like, what happened to you, obviously?
Like, right. Who hurt you?
Yeah, yeah. But maybe what we could do is talk about, like, you know, some of maybe the stigmas of LDRs and why those, you know, are untrue, or how you can work to, you know, make the opposite happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, a big one that I struggled with, especially early in my relationship, is the fear that other people in my life would not view it as a legitimate relationship.
Right.
Which I think in my case was, like, pretty unfounded. Like, that anxiety seemed to live mostly inside my own head. Mm-hmm. But I did find it helpful to, like, introduce my partner to people in my life and vice versa when we were together. And
like, in person?
Like, yeah. Or even, like, you know, sometimes I've been on the phone with my partner and my brother comes in if I'm staying at my parents' house, and the three of us will just like have a conversation on the phone as if we were just hanging out. So, yeah, like kind of integrating them into your life, even though they live far away, like it can be hard, but it is possible.
Yeah.
I also think there's a lot of stigma about like whether an LDR would continue to work if you were to live close together. Like there are a lot of people who say like you should never move in with someone who you've only been in an LDR with, because like you don't know if you're actually compatible in person. Yeah. And like there's like some truth to that. Like me and my partner have been trying to do some longer stays together to try to test that like day-to-day compatibility, because it is a very different situation to sort of be in vacation brain and go see someone for a weekend and just do fun things. And it's just a different vibe from like if they're next to you on the couch doing their work in their pajamas.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different situation. So I think it's good to test out how your relationship works in different contexts, especially if you're hoping to make it no longer an LDR.
Yeah, totally. Is there ever, I think one of the other stigmas is that you, that they're probably cheating. They're probably seeing other people. They're probably, you know, they could be telling you anything because, you know, they're just doing it through text or whatever. Do you have anything to say about that?
I mean,
like that you'll never really know what's going on over there, you know?
Yeah, I think my opinion on that is basically like that could also be true of anyone you were seeing in any context.
Yeah.
Because anyone can tell you anything via text or email or even when you see them in person, and you don't really ever know if anyone is telling the truth. And that's just kind of a facet
life,
of humanity.
Baby.
Like, yeah, this is just like a philosophy lecture now. But but so like what you have to do is just like trust, like work on trust, which is true in any relationship. And like, yeah, maybe my partner is like cheating on me when they're not texting me, but like I think I know them and I think I know that they're not. So it's like, you know, it's, I feel like maybe the problem is that it's harder to build up that trust in an LDR, because like it can be easier to feel like you can believe someone when they're telling it to your face. But I still think you can do it. It just might take longer or take a different form.
Yeah, totally. And last question from the socials. This is from at on Queer Street on Twitter. Do you think being in an LDR means NRE can sometimes last longer? What are the pros and cons of this? So new relationship energy.
Yes. Yeah, this is actually a longstanding theory of mine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
because
yeah.
Because I definitely experienced that. I am a person who has a lot of NRE when I first start dating people. Like, I am very obsessive. I want to constantly be journaling about them and telling my friends about them and seeing them and talking to them. And I was noticing in my current relationship that this went on for, like, many more months than it usually does.
Yeah.
To the point that I was like kind of exhausting myself. Like I was crying and laughing and fantasizing so much that I was just sort of walking around in a daze. Like I really wasn't like accomplishing very much, or like,
very funny.
I don't know. It was just a weird period of my life. And my theory on this is that like, if there is some kind of chemical component to NRE, whether it's related to pheromones or neurotransmitters or I don't know, whatever it is, like I think seeing the person spread out so much like that over a long period of time just gives you like smaller bursts of that rather than having it like kind of all up front.
Yeah.
So that it's just, you just get a longer, I mean, I don't know if this is true of everybody, probably not, but like I certainly found it stretched out my NRE.
Yeah.
And as far as pros and cons, like pros, it's really fun to be an NRE. Like,
it is,
and it can really like create a sense of connection, especially if you're both in it at the same time and in the same ways. Cons are like all the cons that always exist with NRE. Like you might annoy your friends. You might forget to do work that's important or kind of like ignore your friends even.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essentially like being in an altered state.
Kind of, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of equivalent to if you're walking around drunk, but if that was more socially acceptable to do just like throughout your day, it's like you might not be super fun to be around all the time and you might not get everything done that you mean to.
Yeah.
It's kind of a toss up. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting how you're talking about during the part where you were saying that it lasts longer because maybe it's more spread out between the times you see the person. I think that's very similar. And I guess now that I'm thinking about it, being poly with people who have other partners is kind of like being in an LDR because you kind of have to, you know, like for, like maybe not the best words, but like wait for your time in the rotation to when you can see them. So you're not going to be able to just date them, you know, go on a bunch of dates in a couple of weeks and that be really a really fun LDR honeymoon phase. Like you'll see them once and then maybe, you know, they're busy with doing all their other life stuff and being with their other partners. And maybe you won't be able to see them again for 2 weeks and then maybe another 2 weeks. So maybe, you know, 3 months down the line, you've only been on like 5 dates.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like math. Nobody double check that. But just that, you know, that kind of honeymoon NRE, it's kind of similar, isn't it? That it's really just spread out, right?
Right. And then also, like, depending on living arrangements and relationship agreements, maybe you can only hook up when you have a hotel room or when someone happens to have a room free. So it's like there's also that vacation brain element sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Is there anything you would like to leave people on? Maybe something that we didn't get to that you feel like is important to tell people about LDRs, especially with what's happening now in the world?
Oh, I guess one thing that we didn't talk about that I think is actually like part of the sort of bread and butter of my LDR, and I think it is for a lot of other people too, is watching things together. Or just like more generally like consuming media together. Like my partner and I will sometimes like do a countdown to sync up something on Netflix that we want to watch together and we'll be on the phone while we're watching it. Or they will read to me from a book. So, like, they might read me, like, a chapter of a book, like, once a week for a while. Or they'll often read articles to me over the phone or we'll listen to podcasts together. And it's, like, that is another one of those things that if you lived together or were hanging out together, you might just casually do. And in LDRs, that often can fall by the wayside and it doesn't have to. And that can be super fun.
Yeah, I love that because I think when a lot of people think of LDRs, it's like, okay, you're talking to the person a lot, but that's not what relationships are like. You're not just talking 100% of the time, you know. You're doing things together. You're consuming media, you're watching TV, you're eating together, right? Like so it's important and to kind of do, like, those things as well as talk.
And I would say also, like, it's nice to plan dates that are date-y rather than just being you lying in bed talking on the phone. Like, that's great, do that as much as you want, but I always really appreciate when we're able to do like dates. Like we can't do this anymore right now, but we used to, like, we would get dressed up and go to restaurants in our respective cities and talk on the phone while we were eating our dinner. And that's nice. I mean, you can still do that while you're hanging out at home. You can just, like, put on a really cute or fancy outfit, send each other pictures, make a fancy meal. Maybe even you make the same meal in your separate houses.
Put on I think a candle. That this gives it,
just get the date vibes going. And I think it creates a sense of, like, specialness and togetherness that sometimes can be missing.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I love that so much. Kate, you've been absolutely fantastic. I'm sure so many people are going to get so much out of this. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I hope so.
Aww. Would you like to let the people know where they can consume all your media with you?
Yeah, sure. I have a blog at girlyjuice.net. That's girlyjuice.net. And that's about sort of sex, kink, dating, fashion, beauty, just a bunch of stuff. If you're looking for something to read for a long time, I've been doing that blog for almost 8 years, so there's a lot of stuff on there.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And I co-host two podcasts, which we're hopefully going to continue to do during this situation.
Yeah.
One of them is called The Dildorks, and it's about sex, dating, and masturbating, and also, like, a lot of kink and just pervy shit.
Yeah.
It's a good time. And then the other one is called Question Box, which is the game show podcast of shockingly personal questions. Have you guessed it on both? No, you haven't been on the Dildorks.
Not on the Dildorks, but Question Box was so fun. I love that podcast. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Honestly, it's so great. And Brent is so funny. It's really well done.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to have two very excellent podcast co-hosts.
Yes, Bex is amazing too, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of episodes of both of those. So if you, again, if you need something to just like binge listen to, like, we got you.
Totally love it. And of course, the Bedpost show, you may assume at this point, it is on hiatus, obviously, the stage show until further notice. You know, maybe the fall, who knows?
Yeah, who can say?
With what's happening. But you can follow me on Twitter. Yes, it's my pro-domming Twitter, but as we mentioned, you know, it's a lot of slice of life stuff too. I'm at the Lady Pim, at the Lady Pim 1 on Twitter, pim.lady on Instagram, and the Bedpost Podcast on Instagram. And of course, you can always email me at thebedpostsexshow@gmail.com. The original music you are hearing on the podcast is by my good friend Stephanie Copeland. You can find out more about her at stephcopelandmusic.com. We have a Patreon here at the podcast as well. It is the Bedpost Show on Patreon and the Bedpost Sex Show on YouTube. We're doing this really fun sex toy review series that will also be on hiatus due to the strict social isolation that I am currently following. But actually, during this time, I'm going to be receiving a whole new batch of fun, sexy products, and we'll continue that as soon as it's safe to. So one huge last thank you to my lovely guest, Kate Sloan. Thank you so much, Kate, honestly.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, and I'll try not to wait so long before having you on the podcast again. And I won't be bugging you until at least the fall to do a music set at the Bedpost stage, so don't worry about it. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time on the Bedpost podcast with another amazing guest talking about sex and sexuality. Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.